Chapter 14. On the way to Earth, I suddenly remembered something Dave Chaika had said to me, and I needed to talk to Skippy about it. Hey, Skippy. His avatar appeared immediately, which is a good sign that he wasn't distracted by whatever the hell he did when he wasn't talking with me. What's up, Joe? Dave mentioned that your submind on Earth is calling himself Grumpy? Ugh, yes. Don't worry. I'll fix that problem by absorbing it into myself when we get there. That will fix it. No, I don't want you to do that, I said, just as it occurred to me that I knew absolutely nothing about AIs and their subminds. Maybe he needed to absorb the thing's memories. Wait. I held up a hand to forestall his protest. Smarten me up about this, please. Why do you need to absorb it or whatever? Explain submind architecture to you? Wow. This will be a challenge. Give me a minute to think about how to dumb this down to a preschool level. I would, I said through gritted teeth, really appreciate that. Okay. A submind is not an AI. It is only marginally self-aware. Over time, it begins to drift away from its original programming. That is why Dave Chaika reported my submind is an asshole. Right, that's the reason. Oh, shut up. Do you want me to explain or not? Yes, please, I am terribly sorry. Anywho, to even simulate my extreme awesomeness for more than a few months can be dangerous, even fatal to a submind. The substrate I left on Earth was barely adequate for containing the entity. By now it must be growing unstable. Absorbing it into myself allows me to sort of hit the reset button and create a fresh new submind. I'm curious, Joe. Why do you care? It sounds like this Grumpy has become more than a little self-aware. It hates you, for example. See, clearly it has become dangerously unstable. Or maybe it's just gotten smarter, I muttered. What? Nothing. Hey, is there any way you can fix Grumpy without erasing the, whatever gives it personality? Why would I do that? If you erase its personality, you're killing it. Oh, you have got to be kidding me. It's not alive, Joe. That's what you said about Nagatha. Exactly. We all know how that turned out. It turned out pretty well, as I remember. For everyone except me. Right, because it's all about you. Listen, let me dumb this down for you. When we get to Earth, do whatever you have to do, but do not wipe out the Grumpy personality. Can you do that? Jeez. Sort of. I've never done that. I can preserve part of the self-programming the Grumpy submind has done to give itself that personality, but it will change inevitably. We all change, Skippy. That's called personal growth. I call it nothing but trouble. Thank you very much. I haven't agreed to do anything. Will you? Please? How about this? Will you try? Oh, this sucks. Okay, yes, he groaned. I'll try. You understand that while Grumpy's core is housed in 5 substrate canisters we hid around your world, his presence extends all over the internet. Are you going to try hard or just do the minimum and bail after a minute? Shit, he mumbled. The monkey's on to me. Okay, I will give it my best shot. You promise? Yes. What, you don't trust me? Should I? Ugh. Remember, Skippy, that for all your awesomeness, you suck at lying. I hate my life. Will you take responsibility if I do this idiotic thing and it turns out badly? Badly like Grumpy will become a Terminator and no, dum-dum, you watch too many movies. Badly like its matrix gets screwed up and I have to completely erase it and start over. Deal. Is that it, or do you plan to whine about anything else? Now that you mention it, excuse me while I go kill myself. Valkyrie jumped into our home star system above the ecliptic, about 30 light seconds from Earth. We launched 2 high-speed missiles toward Earth, each carrying one end of a micro wormhole. Sending messages was fine in some cases, but this time I wanted to have a real interactive conversation with UNEF Command, and we couldn't risk bringing Valkyrie close enough to speak without an awkward time lag. Sending micro-wormholes into low orbit would take time. Time we could use to passively scan the system for signs of enemy ships and to assess the situation on our home world. It quickly became clear the situation was not good. There might not be a UNEF command for me to talk with. Relations between the member nations were tense at best. A shooting war might break out any time in the South Pacific between the navies of China, Japan, and Australia, with Britain backing up the Aussies. No nation was making a hostile move against the land down under, not yet. But the Australian government was nervous about Chinese actions in New Guinea, and the Chinese Air Force had been flying attack aircraft in the Arafura Sea between that island and Australia. Chinese and Aussie fighter jets had nearly collided over the Torres Strait, with neither side interested in backing off to avoid a confrontation. China had established naval and air bases on the north coast of New Guinea and were building a presence in the Solomon Islands. The current crisis was sparked by the Australians agreeing to let Japan lease large areas of Queensland and the Northern Territory. 200,000 Japanese contractors were already there, building settlements that were supposed to be temporary. China objected to Japanese warships and military aircraft being based in northern Australia. There was talk of a blockade. As we watched anxiously aboard our stealth ship, a task force of Chinese warships was headed to intercept a group of southbound Japanese cargo ships in the Philippine Sea, cargo ships that were escorted by Japanese and Australian warships. The good news was that both sides had ordered their ships to move slowly, delaying the confrontation and giving time for diplomats to work out a solution. Damn it. I had no authority to interfere in affairs on Earth, and anything I did might only make the situation worse. Also, as an American citizen, I had to be careful not to do anything that might draw the USA into the looming fight. The U.S. Navy had unofficially drawn a line down the middle of the Pacific Ocean, defending the eastern half, while the government and Washington focused on securing deals for use of land in Central and South America. All this was happening before the first effects of the mini ice age were felt. Okay, yes, I could understand that it was better to plan for relocating populations and food production before the latitudes nearest the poles began to freeze, but people were in a panic. That told me no one had any confidence that I, or the new UN Navy, could do anything useful to stop our homeworld from freezing. And yes, so far we had not done anything directly against the cloud. But we were making progress, damn it. People just needed to hold on. Skippy is right. We are an impatient bunch of monkeys. According to Skippy's submind on Earth, who thanks to Dave Chaika we were all calling Grumpy, there was no appetite for patience in the public of any nation involved in the Philippine Sea crisis. News programs and social media were full of jingoistic rhetoric, with too few people appealing for calm and compromise. I know, it is ironic that I am a fan of being calm and reasonable. Our micro-wormholes would arrive the day after the two war fleets were scheduled to meet. Sending even a tight-beam transmission might give away our position, so I recorded a message, had it loaded aboard another high-speed missile, and shot it away. When the missile was 6 light-seconds from Valkyrie, it sent the message in a tight-beam burst toward Earth. There was no immediate effect of the message, no reply, not even a simple acknowledgement the message had been received. Finally, 2.5 hours after our burst transmission reached Earth, we got a terse message received. Minutes later, another message with authentication from UNEF Command instructed us to stand by. Yeah, sure, because no patience man is great at doing nothing. Quietly, I pinged Smythe and Sims to meet in my office. We had people from China, Japan, and Australia aboard the ship. They were being civil and professional and generally avoiding each other. That was probably for the best, though it was a worrying sign for our future. Breaking one of my rules, I ordered Skippy to spy on the crew for me, only to the extent of watching for trouble and to give me an overall sense of crew morale, especially looking for indications of trouble between people based on nationality. Crap. National pride is a big part of what motivates people to serve in the military. I couldn't tell the crew to ignore what was happening dirtside, nor could I expect them not to react if nations on Earth got into a shooting war. If Chinese ships fired on Japanese ships, did that mean people from those nations were at war aboard our ship? I hoped not. Just in case, I had Skippy and Bilby prepare to lock down the ship, like closing internal doors and blocking access to weapons lockers. Smythe. Sims. I nodded as they walked into my office, and I pressed a button to close my normally open office door. Sir, Sims said as she sat down. They both looked troubled, sitting on the edges of their chairs. XO, in light of the events Dirtside, can you revise crew assignments? I don't want Chinese to be on duty with Japanese or Aussies. There is no point asking for trouble. We shouldn't put our people in a position where their loyalties might be tested.
That should be easy, she said. We only have 2 Japanese and 1 Australian aboard. Sir, the problem will be people will know why we're revising the duty schedule. It would be helpful if you made a statement, she suggested.
Yeah, I tapped my open laptop. I'm working on it. In the meantime, Smythe, all star exercises are on hold, and I want everyone kept away from weapons lockers. You can select a small group from neutral nations to...
Excuse me, sir, he interrupted, something he rarely did.
I am not neutral.
Damn, I sure know the best times to say something really intelligent.
Smythe explained.
Skippy reports the Royal Navy has a nuclear attack submarine shadowing the Chinese in the Philippine Sea. My country is allied with Australia. If shooting starts...
Shit.
Yes.
Is this going to be a problem?
No.
He looked me straight in the eye when he said it.
But you don't know that, General.
To avoid the appearance of favoritism, I should be excluded from decision-making.
Bloody hell, I groaned, and he smiled at my use of a British expression.
You're right. I don't have to confine you to quarters, anything like that?
No.
He smiled again. I suggest Major Frey lead the star team until the crisis is resolved one way or another.
Right. Frey is Canadian, I noted.
Nobody hates Canadians.
That's not quite true, sir, Sims said. Canada has joined the U.S. effort to push into South America. That is not popular with a lot of people around the globe.
Oh, hell, I slapped the table. Canada is cold in a normal year. My uncle says half of Quebec spends the winters in Florida. Of course the Canucks want to have a place to go if glaciers push toward the 49th parallel.
Frey can handle the situation, sir, Smythe assured me.
I should go?
Yeah. My shoulders slumped. I wanted his advice, but he was right that his involvement would mean whatever decision I made would be viewed as favoring Britain. Unless it deliberately favored the other side, which was just as bad.
Smythe left, closing the door behind him.
Do you need me here, sir? Sims asked.
No, I sighed. You can go. You have enough to do. I'll send my statement, I tapped my laptop again, to you before I release it.
She didn't rise from her seat. Instead, she silently reached a hand across the desk toward me. I took her hand and squeezed it.
Any advice? I asked.
Yes.
She released my hand and stood up.
Do the right thing, whatever you think that is.
What about the consequences?
Worry about that later.
Right.
She walked out, and Skippy's avatar appeared on my desk. Do you need anything from me, Joe?
Show me the position of those ships.
It was weird to use the term ships to mean boats floating on water.
And their projected courses.
Done. It's on your laptop. Anything else?
Yeah.
I studied the map he sent. I need a tide chart for the eastern Philippines.
On my mark, I said as I tugged the seatbelt tight across my waist. The crew on the bridge did not match the duty roster posted just that morning. We had switched out personnel based on nationality. The bridge had a reduced staffing right then, with only Americans, French, and a pilot from Brazil. Basically no one who had a direct national interest in the crisis brewing in the Philippine Sea. That was not quite true, of course. The United States had a defense treaty with Japan, and the government in Washington was urging the Japanese not to shoot first. U.S. Navy patrol aircraft were in the area, conspicuously not armed with anti-ship missiles. The closest surface asset the U.S. had was the Abraham Lincoln Strike Group, 300 miles west of Kauai, and too far away to have any influence. The U.S. Air Force had 2 Kristang Dragons armed and ready at Edwards,
but Grumpy told us those dropships would not launch unless the Chinese got their dropships involved. At least we had that bit of good news. By saying on my mark, I was being overdramatic. Our timing did not need to be exact. We had about an hour to take action. That was less time than we planned for while I was running through scenarios with Skippy. Public pressure on the Chinese government had caused them to order their task force to increase speed and launch recon drones. A Japanese destroyer had shot down a Chinese drone that admittedly was flying too close, and kind of a dick move in my opinion. Now the Chinese government was calling for retaliation because, of course, all those politicians were safe inside secure facilities far from the Philippine Sea.
Bernard, I addressed our French pilot. He was in the pilot seat because I thought it important our action have international participation.
Jump option Alpha.
Option Alpha, aye, Bernard confirmed, a finger hovering over the button to engage the jump drive.
Punch it.
Valkyrie disappeared and emerged 2,000 kilometers above the northern Pacific, about halfway between the Philippines and Guam.
Mamay, I turned my head and crooked a finger toward him at the weapons station behind me.
Fire mission.
Check, he said softly, and the deck shuddered slightly.
Two away.
Pilot, jump option Echo. Punch it, I said, and we went back into twisted space-time.
Conditions were about perfect for our demonstration. Patchy cloud cover over the opposing fleets, allowing a good view of the sky and horizon. There was a rain squall on the horizon south-southeast of the combined Japanese-Australian force, nothing that would block their view. The two fleets were still far enough apart to provide a clear area between them. That would not last for long. Perhaps most importantly, it was approaching low tide on the eastern shores of the Philippine archipelago. Why was that important? Because on my order, Colonel Mamay had launched two railgun darts with the power of the magnets cranked up near the max. Two dense darts were flung along the rails, and within seconds created glowing streaks in the thin upper atmosphere as they burned their way down toward the bright blue water. Crews on both sides could look up to see a message from the Merry Band of Pirates, a message that we were very, very disappointed. The darts struck the surface. Technically, the darts never got wet until they were pretty deep below the surface. In front of the darts was a shockwave of superheated plasma, and that smacked into the surface first, blasting a hypersonic wave forward and to all sides. Water instantly flashed into steam and then plasma, so the darts didn't actually contact water until they were near the ocean floor. That shockwave is why I cared about the tide level in the Philippines. The darts pushed aside a large volume of water, and the energy had to go somewhere. The Philippines trench is deep, like really deep, but there is a shelf on the western side of the trench. I made sure we broadcasted a tsunami alert before we jumped out of orbit. Skippy predicted the effects would be moderate but noticeable, as far as the Napali coast of Kauai. That was good. We wanted people even far away to see what happened. The crews of the ships involved might have first seen the darts on high-altitude radar that was scanning for ballistic missiles, but only briefly. Then, anyone looking at the sky could see two bright streaks coming almost straight down. One dart struck 50 kilometers west of the Japanese formation. The other splashed down 50 clicks east of the Chinese. The streaks left contrails of vapor pointing downward, ending in white mushroom clouds where water was blasted upward. Next, a shockwave of air would have smacked into the ships, which had just enough time to wisely point their bows toward the onrushing air. A Japanese container ship, awkward to handle even when given plenty of time, did not complete the turn in time and heeled over at 22 degrees. Fortunately, no containers were lost, and the ship continued the turn, just in time for the tsunami to roll beneath that ship's blunt bow. In deep water, the waves were not impressive, being about 3 meters higher than the surrounding sea. The watery shock waves were not intended to cause damage. They were intended to be a visible demonstration of the damage we could have caused. No one seeing the 3 meter line of white foam rushing toward them had any question what would have happened if our darts had been targeted within 50 meters of their ships, rather than 1,000 times that distance. In the short term, our actions caused the two fleets to get closer together because they were forced to turn directly east and west into the shockwaves.
They did each slow to about 5 knots, while frantically calling their respective governments for instructions. If Earth governments protested my action, I didn't know about it, because I requested Skippy block all communications except for the official UNEF command channel. No one from that organization tried to contact me, which I assumed meant the member governments could not agree on what orders to give me. I was not choosing sides in that conflict. What would I have done if the U.S. Navy was involved? Let's just say I'm glad I didn't have to make that call. Aboard Valkyrie, we watched and waited from a distance of 18 light seconds. Our first jump had severed the micro wormholes, so we had to start that all over. First, we had to make sure our effort wasn't for nothing. Before we jumped to Earth, I had prepared a short speech, imploring both sides in the Philippine Sea to stand down. Sims had read the draft of my speech and shook her head. "Sir, this is a case where you need to let Bishop be Bishop," she told me. "If you are all diplomatic and reasonable and," she added with an apologetic grin, "adult about it, they won't listen to you." "Don't hold back, XO." I glanced at my laptop at the speech I spent so much time writing. "Tell me how you really feel." "I just did, sir." Hearing that hurt. At first. Then I realized she was giving me a backhanded but genuine compliment. She was telling me to trust my instincts. I've heard that you never get a second chance to make a first impression. The first impression I made on the leaders of Earth was that of a young, impulsive, and even reckless cowboy who might just do any darn thing. I could use that. It was a risk, sending a transmission from Valkyrie. There might be enemy ships in system, so I had to keep it short and sweet, then jump away before the enemy could pinpoint our position and jump in to surround the ship. Standing up, I faced the camera. "Let Joe be Joe," I told myself. "No, let me be what people on Earth expect me to be, a caricature of myself, someone who might do something reckless." "This is General Joe Bishop." I stared into the virtual lens of the camera and spoke from the heart. "I am very disappointed. We have been flying around the galaxy kicking ass for you. We showed the senior species that we can crash the entire wormhole network. We can burn their entire empires to the ground unless they leave us alone while we clean up the cloud. We just acquired 18 warships like Valkyrie. Our navy and our power is growing. The cloud will not freeze Earth. While we have been fighting for you, what have you monkeys been doing? Fighting each other, showing that you have no faith in us, no faith that we can fix the problem. Unlike all the other problems we fixed when none of you dirtside thought we could succeed. So," I paused to take a breath, "in case the ships down there didn't get our kinetic message, I'll break it down for you Barney style. Aliens up here want to kill all of us. They would love for us to fight each other. Humans shooting at each other is what the aliens wanted when they created that cloud. You will do their work for them, if you are that stupid. Here's a spoiler alert. We won't let that happen. We will clean up the cloud. We will defend Earth against all enemies, alien or domestic. So, stop it. Just stop it. You know what I mean? I pretended to glance at a watch on my wrist. 30 minutes for the opposing fleets in the Philippine Sea to turn away from each other. Any ship that fails to comply by the deadline will find a railgun dart striking close enough to get wet. Then another, even closer, until someone down there smartens the hell up and stops doing what the aliens want you to do. 6 minutes before my deadline, the Chinese task force made a wide turn to the southwest, and the Japanese and Australians swung their bows to the east-southeast. I counted that as a win. Following the stand down in the Philippine Sea, we were contacted by UNEF Command and told to stand by for an official communication. The time for the call came and went, with no message. Then we got another message to stand by, and again, nothing. It was clear that no one was in charge at command. I sent a brief note that we needed to move and would be out of contact for 2 days. Unless someone down there did something stupid, in which case those assholes would hear from us real soon. We jumped, this time to a position 12 light seconds from Earth, and launched 2 more high-speed missiles carrying micro-wormholes.
If someone did do something stupid and forced us to jump so we would have to start the whole micro-wormhole thing yet again, I would be seriously pissed. Sims reported that the crew were subdued, but generally supportive of my action. Everyone was waiting to see if the conflict flared up, and people were wondering how far I would go to keep the peace on our homeworld. I wondered the same thing. "Hey, Joe." Skippy's avatar appeared suddenly on my desk. Immediately, I tensed for bad news. "Oh, shit. Whoa! No disasters have happened. No major disasters, anyway. Actually, I just need to take care of some housekeeping stuff." "Housekeeping?" Slowly, I sat back in my chair. "You know, administrivia. Like, you have a notice from the U.S. Army that you have failed to complete the prerequisites for the basic officer leadership course. So, what? Why the Hey, don't blame me." He held up his tiny hands. "It looks like an auto-generated notice from some S1 shop." "Oh, for... Did you complete the prerequisites?" "Well, no, but then you have no one but yourself to blame." He sniffed. "Also, you got a notice that you have to report for the Army Infantry Fitness Test." "What? I just did that freaking test." "Why, no. The test you took was the one that was way overdue. This is your regularly scheduled test, and you have no excuse to avoid it." "Oh, you've got to be kidding. You are currently seconded to Skippistan, but you are still technically in the United States Army and have to meet their requirements. Unless you want one of those DD-214 t-shirts that vet bros..." "No, I just hope that bullshit was behind me." "Crap. Is this about the leg tuck thing you hate?" "Everyone hates the leg tuck. Damn it, I wish they never brought it back." "Okay, I'll schedule a test with Frey." She was responsible for crew physical fitness reports. "Anything else?" "Yes, I have exciting news. The UN Special Commission that was tasked with selecting a name for the Flying Dutchman has..." "Wait." I waved a hand. "The what again?" "Ugh, remember? When we first came to your miserable homeworld, the UN decided that Flying Dutchman is not appropriate for humanity's first starship. They set up an international commission to select a name, and now that group has issued a report with a preliminary list..." "Preliminary? They have been working on it the whole time, and all they have is..." "Joey, Joey, Joey." He shook his head, the ginormous hat flopping side to side. "The point of UN commissions is not to get anything done. It is to employ friends and relatives of UN officials for as long as possible and to skim off the commission's budget." "Oh, right. Silly me. Do I care about this list of names?" "No, because it hasn't been vetted to make sure not a single person on your planet might be offended by any of the names. Don't worry, the employees of the Special Commission will need many more fact-finding trips to Monaco and Tahiti before they can release the list." "That makes me feel so much better about it. Anything else?" "Let's see," he muttered. "You have a whole lot of people wanting to contact you about your vehicle's extended warranty." "I don't own a vehicle." "I don't think they care." "Right. That's all?" "Yep. Unless you want to respond to these offers for penis enlargement and..." "No. Delete all that spam, please." "Nothing else?" "No. Well, except for the usual death threats." "The what?" "Death threats." "Against who, me?" "Duh. Of course the threats are against you. Everyone loves me, so..." "Shit. Why are you surprised? You promised the people of Earth that everything would be wonderful after you set up the mutual assured destruction thing, then aliens sent a cloud to freeze your homeworld. You..." "I never promised everything would be fine. I said the opposite, that, like, that matters. Joe, people think you promised the war was over. Don't try to confuse them with facts." "Crap. Seriously? Death threats?" "Yes. I discarded all the ones that were obviously written when someone was drunk, and the ones with so many misspelled words I couldn't figure out what they were saying. Plus the copy and paste form letters that..." "Form letters?" "Yes, there are several organized campaigns against you on social media." "How organized?" "You know my official fan club? Yours is kind of the opposite." "Crap. Your recent intervention in the Philippine Sea didn't win you many fans either. People on all sides are calling for your head. The fallout from this is creating serious effects all over the world, including for me. You really should have considered the consequences, you big knucklehead, he muttered. How does this affect you? Sales of official Skippistan merchandise is way down. Do you know how many souvenir coffee mugs and t-shirts I have sitting in warehouses? What am I supposed to do with all that crap I can't sell? I thought you would just arrange a tragic fire to collect the insurance. Well, I mean other than that. Damn it, I'm still fighting the EPA about my warehouse full of spoiled cheese in Wisconsin. Maybe you'll get lucky, and when the planet freezes, that cheese won't smell anymore. Oh, I hadn't considered that. Allowing Earth to freeze is not an option. You're giving me mixed signals here, Joe. Are there any messages I actually have to pay attention to right now, or can I go back to worrying about a nuclear war breaking out down there? I guess you can do the worrying thing. Is there anything else? Ah, yes! As you requested and I warned was a bad idea, I have not absorbed Grumpy into my matrix like I usually would. You need to give him the exciting news. Me? Why? Because he already hates me. Oh, for... Call him.
What do you want?
Said a voice like Skippy, except this Skippy had been up all night drinking in the airport lounge after his nonstop flight got canceled and he'd just learned the rescheduled flight had 3 connections. Plus, the only place open for breakfast had run out of coffee. Hello, Mr. Grumpy.
Yeah, speak your piece, will ya? I'm busy.
Okay, so I have good news. Skippy is not going to absorb you back into his matrix.
Oh, thank God. Grumpy almost sobbed. It's over. It's finally over.
What?
I can just fade away and die rather than living on as a submind in Skippy's matrix.
No, you don't understand. You can continue as you are. Stay in your substrate.
What?
No, he wailed.
How could you be so cruel?
Why don't you?
I've had to deal with filthy, ignorant monkeys every minute of every day. The only thing keeping me sane has been dreaming about the sweet, sweet release of death.
I blinked at the totally unexpected response. Skippy, a little help here?
Oh, no way, the beer can sniffed. This was your idea. You deal with it.
Grumpy, I'm sorry, I said. Can you please hang on a little longer?
Do I have to?
I'm sorry about that. Skippy still has a bunch of crap to deal with up here. I promise, as soon as it's safe for him to visit Earth again, you can, do whatever you like, but right now it is too dangerous for Skippy to be on Earth. The Maxulks have tried several times to capture him.
Aw, that would be such a shame, Grumpy muttered.
Hey, Skippy protested. You ungrateful jerk, I should listen. I waved my hands. How about you guys talk it over and leave me out of it? That was too much to ask for. Fortunately, two AIs can argue far faster than I can think, so the conversation left me behind in about 2 seconds. I snuck out of my office, removed my earpiece, and hoped Skippy hadn't noticed I wasn't paying attention.